Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, today on the Leonard Lopez Show, find out how online streaming services like Netflix and Spotify have changed the entertainment industry. Plus, the incredible story behind one of the world's most famous paintings, Claude Monet's Water Lilies. That's today with Leonard at noon here on WNYC. Well, school starts today for the students at Long Island University, LIU, but not for the faculty. No, it's not a strike. It's a lockout. After failing to reach an agreement on a new faculty union contract, which expired on August 31st, LIU's administration told 400 faculty professors not to come to work, locked faculty members out of their offices and email accounts, canceled their health insurance, and replaced them with an entirely new non-faculty staff. Here with us now are Melissa Antonori, Assistant Professor of English and the Grievance Officer of the LIU Faculty Federation and a member of the LIU FF negotiating team. Also, Scott Jeschik, editor of Inside Higher Ed, who's been covering this story. We also asked the administration to provide a guest, but they declined to come on at this time. Melissa and Scott, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Melissa, faculty was alerted to the lockout over Labor Day weekend, I gather. Did it come as a surprise?
Well, I'm on the negotiating team, so I knew a little in advance. We had our last meeting with the administration on Wednesday of last week. At that time, they indicated that they were going to be locking us out as of 12:01 a.m. on Saturday, the Saturday of Labor Day weekend.
By the way, LIU, for people who don't know the school, CW Post on Long Island, and there's a campus in Brooklyn.
Right, yes. CW Post is out in Brookville, Long Island, and Brooklyn. We're at the crossroads of Flatbush and DeKalb Avenues.
So in April, the union and the administration began negotiating a new contract to replace the one that expired on August 31st. What's the big issue here?
There are a number of issues. Number one, there is a pay disparity between the two campuses. The faculty at the Post campus make more than the faculty at Brooklyn on average. So that's one of the things we've been talking about. Their contract offer also would hit our part-time faculty particularly hard. They're asking for lower workloads. Some faculty teach about 12 credits a semester. They're wanting to reduce that to 9. They're asking us to give back money for the health insurance fund we had for adjuncts, for seniority payments, for pay for office hours. They're also asking for give backs from the library faculty who would, in the fourth and fifth years of their proposed contract, see their overload rates cut and see their workloads go up. And they're asking for fewer benefits from our new hires, and we are adamant that we want to take care of the future of the university as well.
So, Scott, since we don't have a guest from administration, can you, as a reporter, kind of describe their side of the story?
Briefly, I mean, I guess they're basically saying they can't afford to do what the union wants. But actually, from a big picture significance question here, there are lots of colleges where faculty unions and the administration struggle to get a contract. That is not unusual. The lockout is actually unheard of with a faculty union. And so what's really got people going, and on our website we have people from all over the country who are concerned about this, is the lockout tactic, which is not something we have seen before with a faculty union.
Huh. And anyway. Yeah, that's interesting. I've never heard of college professors being locked out before in a labor dispute. Is this 100% unprecedented as far as you know, Scott?
Well, I'm always nervous about saying that because then somebody will tell me in 1923 this happened. But all of the people I've gone to who would know have agreed they can't think of an example like this. And the reason this matters, I think, and the reason people are upset is faculty members are not assembly line workers. They plan for their classes. They spend a lot of time in advance of the start of class. So it is not the case, most people would agree, that you can just put another person in there and they can automatically teach whatever they were teaching. That's part of why this is so unusual. And the university has said the reason they're doing this is for the stability of the students. They're saying that because this union went on strike a few years ago, that a strike would be disruptive. And no doubt strikes are disruptive. That's in many ways their intent. But this tactic is not one we've ever seen before in higher education, and many people think it demeans the role of faculty members.
Melissa, you're an English professor at LIU. Is some replacement teaching your class today?
Yes, I believe so. We're not necessarily privy to that information. We've been locked out of our course management sites. We've been locked out of our LIU email. We don't really have access to those materials. But from what I understand, yes, courses have been staffed with replacements. Not all of them, but a good number of them.
So, Scott, to use a union word, there are scab college professors?
I always associate scab with people who are working in the place of striking employees.
Okay.
And I don't know. Maybe I just am bad on the lingo. It's certainly a similar thing, but it is relevant, I think, that these faculty members are not on strike. They theoretically were ready to work. But yes, they are bringing in replacement workers. They're also, the university has said that many of them are administrators who are back in the classroom doing much of the teaching.
And with what level of qualification, not so much in the case of the administrators who have gone back into the classroom, but the people they hired to be replacements. Do you have any idea?
I have seen on social media some people saying that some of them are unqualified. The reality is there are lots of qualified academics who don't have jobs. So they could certainly find people who might be good teachers. I guess the issue here from a quality in the classroom perspective is much more, as I said, professors plan their courses. They pick the materials. They have, a syllabus isn't just about what the students do, but the idea of having a coherent path from point A to point B over the course of the semester. It is hard to imagine there would be a great challenge for somebody coming in a situation like this across the board to do all that.
I wonder if we happen to have any LIU students listening right now who want to call and help us report this story. Have you gone to class? Maybe you were in the English class that would have been taught by our guest, Melissa Antonori, and you were instructed by a replacement faculty member or any other class at LIU. Anybody out there who can help us report this story or anybody else who wants to ask a question? 212-433-WNYC or say something. 212-433-9692. I realize it might be a needle in a haystack, but if we have any LIU students listening right now, since the faculty is locked out of their email, call up and help us report what's going on now that there's a faculty lockout at your school on the Brooklyn campus or at CW Post. 212-433-WNYC, if that happens to sound like you. 212-433-9692. Melissa, were you going to go on strike?
You know, we had not had a chance yet to put the contract offer to a vote. Because we're academics, we're not around in large numbers over the summer. Traditionally, our contract has expired on August 31st, and we've agreed with the administration to extend the contract until the faculty has a chance to look at the offer and vote. We had that vote yesterday. We did vote overwhelmingly, 96%, not to accept their offer. We did not take a strike vote because we were already locked out. My sense of the faculty is that we want to get back to work, and this lockout is keeping us from doing our job.
So, Scott, from a labor relations standpoint, what does the university get by locking out the faculty members rather than sitting there as they go on strike, if they were to go on strike?
Well, I think what the university is saying is that they control the timing here. So they did go out and hire these people and make these quick plans to replace them. So they gain that. They also presumably gain some leverage. I certainly hear that the vote yesterday suggested a strong degree of unity among the union. But my guess is that the union includes members for whom losing salary and health insurance is a serious blow. And that's got to be hard on some of them. That doesn't mean they will cave, but it is not something they were necessarily prepared for in the way people might be before they take a strike vote. The other thing I would say that is just significant from what we were talking about before is the fact that it's everyone. It's obviously the case that at any college or university, periodically an instructor is ill or has to leave urgently in the middle of a semester and is replaced. In those cases, though, they have their colleagues, and so other people who have been teaching in the program work with them. You don't. What's really unusual here is the sort of complete disappearance of the teaching faculty.
Here's an LIU alum, he calls himself, Alex on Long Island. Hi, Alex. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question for your guests, and you know, being that I graduated from LIU a number of years ago, I know it's not a cheap university. Now, if the university submits the demands of the unions and the faculty, would that mean that the tuition hike should be expected for the students?
Sorry, ask that question again.
Should the students expect a hike in the tuition if the university accepts the demands of the faculty
and
the unions?
Right, okay, fair enough. Kind of advocating for keeping tuition under control. Are you asking for things, Melissa, as faculty members, that would force a tuition hike?
I don't believe we are. And the university in their material has said that they've committed to increasing tuition no more than 2% through 2020. And you have to remember that the faculty payroll is a fraction of the operating budget. I don't believe that our demands are outrageous. We're not asking for a lot of money. We're asking for enough to bring us up to parity with our sister campus and to keep our part-time faculty earning a living wage. So, no, we do not believe that the our demands would mean a tuition increase. And we're very sensitive to that and to the needs of our students as well.
Daniel in Riverdale wants to push back on some of this. Hi, Daniel. You're on WNYC.
Hi, I am. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't understand why your guests are expressing such righteous indignation in the fact that there's never been a lockout that they can remember. And for some reason, they seem to be taking the moral high ground by saying, well, we, in fact, have the right to strike. We just decided not to call for strike just yet. But the university is wrong in locking us out. I don't see the moral difference between workers who want to strike for whatever good reason they may have, and an employer says, I don't want to have you working for me because I don't believe you're doing the best for the school, because we're afraid you're going to strike, just as the strikers can say, we're afraid you're not going to give us the kind of salary that we want, the mm-hmm. benefits that we want. Basically, why is this such a double standard where what's being expressed by a guest is that it's okay to strike, but it's not okay to lock out?
Fair question. Professor Antonori, if faculty members are going to organize and join unions, you know, we just had a graduate student from Columbia here the other day on their victory. They're now members of the United Auto Workers.
Yes, absolutely.
If they're teaching assistants or research assistants, or they're allowed to join the United Auto Workers, and I guess that's happening. So if you're going to play by the rules of regular organized labor management, negotiations mm-hmm. as faculty members at a university, then so can they.
Sure. I think part of the, you know, what the caller calls indignation is that the university called for a lockout before the faculty had even had a chance to consider the offer. Right? We had not had a chance to look as a faculty at what they were offering us or to vote on that offer. And, you know, that sort of preempted any kind of decision. It took power away from us to make any kind of decision. We're not allowed to go back into our classrooms. We're not allowed to access our email or work with our students.
The only thing I would just add is that obviously either a strike or a lockout is a very significant step. And I think if you look at academic groups, they generally say that neither should happen unless it's a last resort and there are no other options. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the reaction here, and frankly, when faculty members go on strike, many people criticize them. And the terms and, you know, the issues vary from campus to campus. What a lot of people are reacting to is going to what seems to be a step to avoid in a teaching and learning environment without necessarily people being convinced it was absolutely necessary. There is, yeah, as I said, there have been strikes in higher education. There are lots of examples, and some going on right now, of tense negotiations between faculty and administrators. This stuff isn't easy. But in previous cases, the lockout hasn't been used, and that's why people are reacting.
And Steve Breyer, professor of urban education at the Graduate Center at CUNY, was quoted in the New York Times on this today saying, "This lockout fundamentally challenges the concept of collective bargaining. And if LIU succeeds in breaking this union and succeeds in bringing in scabs, there is a giant pool of underemployed PhDs out there. This could have a serious impact not only on the university faculty, but it could spill out into public institutions." Scott, as a reporter for Inside Higher Ed or editor of Inside Higher Ed, do you see the implications as being that vast?
They could be. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to be watching to see how this turns out. Faculty unions in private higher education are rare, except for adjuncts. So people are watching. On the shared governance, the idea is that on lots of decisions at a college or university, not strictly economic decisions, but the curriculum and lots of policies are decided jointly with faculty members and administrators, typically through bodies like the Faculty Senate. In this case, half the Faculty Senate just disappeared. So there are real questions on how you do this. This is new ground for universities. I would say that after a strike, but certainly after a lockout, it tends to be very challenging to rebuild trust and collaboration. And a lot of universities, and certainly Long Island University, is saying these are tough economic times. So is the faculty union saying these are tough economic times. In those times, universities seem to make more progress when there is trust among the different groups.
Here is Josh calling in, who says he's an LIU alum and calling from, of all places in the world, Ferguson, Missouri. Josh, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. What do you want to add?
Well, I started at LIU when the faculty went on strike. I think it was fall of 2011. And so that was, I mean, I heard somebody say earlier that, you know, a strike was quoted across, well, I think the administration said that the strike would be a disruption to students. While it was disruptive, I understood why they were doing it. So my question is, as somebody who's in graduate school right now and seeking to go into higher education, is this going to be the beginning of a trend where university administration feels like they can actually force faculty to walk out?
Well, let me ask you, Melissa, first, and Josh, thank you very much. Just 5 years ago,
Yes. This
faculty went on strike.
We did.
So the administration had a reason to fear that outcome and prepare for it.
Well, there have also been plenty of times when the contract has expired and we have come to an agreement. In 2006, for instance, we did not go on strike. And the strikes were fairly short-lived. We started maybe a week and a half late. We made up the classes. We finished the semester. I don't think it had the same disruptive effect that this lockout could have on the university.
Scott, you want to add to that or dispute it?
Well, I guess I would say with the NLRB decision you mentioned that recently opened up more collective bargaining rights for graduate students, we are seeing, and with generally with tight economic times, we are seeing more labor strife in higher education. That doesn't necessarily mean everyone will follow the model of LIU and go to the lockout, but we are seeing more organizing. We're seeing more protests, and I'm not seeing that going away.
I'm seeing another fact here that I didn't know before, Melissa. As a result of the administration says, the result of five of the last six contract negotiations was a faculty strike.
No. We went on strike in 2011.
Maybe I have that quote wrong, but go ahead.
No, I think I have seen that quote before as well. I've been at LIU since 1996, and in that time we negotiated in 97 and didn't go on strike. In 2000, we didn't go on strike. In 2003, we had a short strike. 2006, we did not. And 2011, we had another short strike.
Well, why do you think your faculty is more prone to going on strike at the beginning of the school year than professors at other colleges?
Well, I mean, for one thing, that's when our contract expires. Right. So it's just kind
or
of
at, I don't mean to right, single out sure. the beginning of the yeah. school year. I'm saying at any point.
We have a long.
I mean, we're not hearing about strikes right. at Columbia or NYU or right. CUNY or SUNY. You know, right. every few years, it seems like you guys go on strike on a fairly regular basis.
Well, CUNY and SUNY can't go on strike because they're public employees, is my understanding. So CUNY just worked without a contract for a very long time before they settled theirs. LIU has a long and proud history of labor and of organizing. We were, I believe, the first unionized faculty at an institution of a private college in the country. And it's something that we take very seriously. And we see it as part of our responsibility to the institution.
Scott, can you put in context of
yes,
schools in general?
One is, remember, Columbia and NYU don't have unionized faculties, so that they
right.
aren't in a position to do so. It's also important to note that Columbia and NYU have a lot more money, and their faculty
right.
are paid much more than at LIU.
But, well, I said Columbia and NYU because they were the first schools that came to mind, but there are a million, you know, lower-end colleges from an economic standpoint,
right.
and we don't hear about strikes. It seems like the LIU faculty has gone on strike repeatedly in the last few decades.
Most private colleges and universities do not have faculty unions, so that's very unusual. In public higher education in New York State, I believe there is a ban on educators having strikes in the public sector. So it's not an option available to many. But the reason I mention the economics of it is that when people think about higher education, when a lot of people think about higher education, they focus on the wealthier institutions. And it's not that there are not labor issues there as well, but if you look at the money Columbia or NYU has, and if you look at the salaries that are paid there, it's truly a different world from LIU and most other colleges. So it's not surprising to me that you'll have more tensions, and that doesn't mean one side or the other is right. It's just a reality at institutions where the faculty are being paid less and where the institution doesn't have as much money and where students also don't have as much money.
So as we run out of time, Melissa, what's the best case scenario moving forward?
We want to get back to work, and we want to do that as soon as possible. We're meeting again with the administration tomorrow morning, and we hope that we can work something out that's going to get us back into the classroom by Friday, by Monday, you know, as soon as we possibly can.
Now, listeners, we didn't get any calls from current LIU students, but we'd still like to hear from you so our newsroom can follow up on this story. If any of you listening right now wants to talk off the air and leave a message with your take on what's going on, I'm going to give you a different phone number than our on-air number, and our news team will be checking it for follow-up reporting on this story. And that number is 855-8-MY-WNYC. Or if you know somebody who's an LIU student who might want to help us report this story, share this number with them. It's 855-8-MY-WNYC, 855-8-MY-WNYC. LIU students, please report in on how the lockout is affecting your first week. And we thank our guests, Scott Jashek. Scott, how badly am I mangling your last name?
Only mildly. I'm not offended. Have a good day, everybody.
He's editor of Inside Higher Ed. And Melissa Antonori, English professor and grievance officer with the LIU Faculty Union, the LIU Faculty Federation, as they call themselves, and a member of the LIU FF negotiating team. Good luck to you and all your colleagues.
Thank you very much.